Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we'll talk with Kathy Christiansen about her new book, Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat. After a mysterious closed casket funeral, Billy Barnes can't really believe that his grandfather's dead. Doubts grow when he overhears his grandpa's former Marine buddy divulge sensitive information to his grandma. Then a forgotten journal is discovered, one with information about his grandpa's secretive military service unknown to the family. And in the book, two boys embark on a dangerous quest to find Billy's grandpa. They confront obstacles and setbacks, including Doug, the school bully, and Billy's archenemy, until they find themselves entangled in a dark cyber plot threatening global financial meltdown. Billy deploys his dad's drone. He takes risks, uses computer skills to locate his grandpa in the terrorist hideout. And with almost no time to save his grandpa and Doug, the terrorist hostage, he has little to rely on but his BMS bike and courage. Kathy Christiansen is a former middle school teacher. She taught reading and writing for 25 years, was the recipient of the 1993-1994 Cedar Ridge Middle School and Cache County School District Teacher of the Year Awards, as well as the 2008 Hats Off Award. And she believes reading good books provides a view of the world that helps children grow and understand their place in life. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you coming in. I understand this book started as it was on your bucket list.
It was. I retired about 12 years ago and sat down and wrote out a bucket list of things I wanted to do. And since I had taught writing, that was kind of my major passion and focus when I was teaching middle school. I thought I need to do something productive in the writing area. So I put that on my list, was to write a book. Easier said than done. And I kept moving it down on my list year after year. And finally, my husband kept prodding me and saying, you really need to write that book. And he gave me a little idea to start with. And so it began.
We could mention your husband is somewhat famous.
Yes, Mike Christiansen.
Yeah. Guitarist, right?
The guitarist, yeah. Director of the guitar program at USU for 39 years.
Yeah. Your son's a guitarist as well?
Yes, and he was hired to take Mike's place after Mike retired.
Yeah, yeah, he's a great guitarist as well. Did you have non-musical children?
Well, they all were musical to some degree, but not all of them have that as their profession. We do have a daughter who she and her husband graduated from Mike's program, and they teach down in at South Plains College in Texas.
Yeah. I should have phrased it non-professionals, right? They're all,
yes.
They're probably all musicals.
Yes.
Musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, before we get in, I can't resist asking this question. What's it like being married to a professional musician? Because there's ups and downs with that.
It's really kind of a fun lifestyle. I always say I'm probably the only person in Cache Valley who does her housework to live music, because Mike is always on his guitar practicing and playing and putting things together and writing. And it's been kind of an interesting combination because I taught English. I kind of have been his editor. He has written 54 different guitar pedagogy books over the years, and I've done a lot of editing for him. So it was kind of a good team. We're kind of a good team,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, live music while you're doing housework, that's not a bad thing.
No, that's really fun.
That is fun. Yeah. So I understand it was Mike who said, hey, you ought to cross that off your bucket list.
Yes, he kind of pushed and pushed for a while, and I just really couldn't come up with an idea to get started. But about probably, oh my gosh, well, in 1974, we experienced a really sad tragedy where his parents did die tragically. And because of the situation, the funeral was a closed casket funeral. We took his sister in when she was 13 and raised her. And so we kind of had that experience behind us. And he said, why don't you just take that idea and kind of roll with that? Another interesting thing that happened quite a few years afterwards, it was probably 15 or 20 years afterwards, was a former friend of his dad who had been in the Navy with him came to our house and wanted to tell us a little bit about Mike's dad that we had no information about. And he explained to us that Mike's dad had been recruited by the Navy SEALs to go into that division because he was a really good sharpshooter. He was a great swimmer, and he could hold his breath for a long, long time, and they thought that they could use his talents. And so those were kind of the things that started to mull around in my brain to get me started on writing the book.
I guess your hero, did that come early? Your hero was going to be a middle schooler because you taught middle school? Is that why you...
Well, I wanted the book to be for middle school kids.
Okay.
And so I debated, should it be a girl, should it be a boy? But it's really kind of interesting. Girls will get involved in books with boy heroes, but boys don't often, as often I should say, get involved in books with girl heroes.
Interesting.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'll just make the hero in the story a boy. And his friend.
Yeah. And in your acknowledgments, you note that some of the character traits for the Billy and his friend come from your brothers.
That's right. I was the youngest in my family and the only girl. I had two older brothers. Eddie was the oldest. Billy was the next. And they were both really great brothers, but they were mischievous kids. There was quite a big age difference between all of us. My oldest brother was 12 years older than I, and my brother Billy was 6 years older. And so I wasn't directly involved in a lot of the things that they did as we were all growing up. But they were good boys, but they were very mischievous. And so I kind of drew upon what I remembered of them in creating the two main characters in the story.
So that would provide a challenge, right? Because you were never a teenage boy. So, but I guess observing your brothers.
And being a middle school teacher for 25 years.
Observing a lot of teenage boys, yeah.
Got to see a lot of things that boys did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe you could read a passage for us early in the book.
I'll start out with just the beginning. "I hate him. How could he do this to me?" Billy said to himself. He said he loved us, but he didn't. He was selfish. He only thought of himself, not us. I wish I'd never known him. Billy walked into his bedroom, closing his door. For the past week, he had kept his emotions in check. He couldn't control them any longer. His body began to shake. The bed shook. The room shook. His whole world shook. Moving his guitar out of the way, he threw himself on his bed and started sobbing. How could his Grandpa Tom be gone? Billy's grandpa was young, in his late 50s. He was one of those grandpas every child wishes for. Fun, witty, athletic, smart, full of life, but with a soft side. Just hours earlier, he had been at Grandpa's viewing, funeral and graveside service. It had been a closed casket viewing, so Billy didn't get a chance to see his grandpa or say goodbye to him. At the viewing, he stood next to his father, David, his mother, Bonnie, and his 8-year-old sister, Marianne, as hundreds of people filed past the casket paying their respects. He felt like miles of emptiness. "Your father was one of a kind. We loved your dad. Tom was one of those people who could get along with anyone. Your dad was always there to help when he was needed," were some of the comments Billy heard standing next to his dad in the funeral home. He smiled at the people and stood there, hollow, as the soft organ music played in the background of the flower-scented room. At the funeral, it wasn't easy to subdue his feelings as Kim, the church organist, played a rendition of Ave Maria, and the congregation sang, "Nearer, my God, to thee," but he kept it together. His father gave a touching eulogy, and his grandpa's best friend, Jim, gave an inspirational talk about how someday they would all be together again in heaven. Billy didn't want to wait for heaven. He wanted to be with his grandpa now. For Billy, the graveside service was heart-wrenching. Because his grandpa had been in the Navy, all the armed service traditions played out. The 21-gun salute, the playing of taps, and the ceremonial folding of the flag which had been draped over his grandpa's casket. It was tough watching the veterans hand a folded flag to his sobbing grandma, her head slumped forward, allowing tears to spill onto the flag. Then a man stepped forward out of the crowd with an object in his hand. It was a piece of gold metal with Poseidon's trident entwined in the design. He plunged his hand down on the casket, embedding the pin into the elegantly carved wooden coffin. Billy was shocked and confused. Others gasped. In his 12 years, this had been the hardest week of his life. First came the news that his grandpa had died. Then the devastating news that his grandpa had taken his own life. No one wanted to believe it. His mother had fallen backwards into the living room chair when she heard the news. His father merely stood cemented in place, ashen-faced, stoic, shaking his head. Billy had been scared, not daring to move nor speak. This demeanor had stayed with him all week until today. Now his emotional gate was open. There was no stopping the tears or agony at this point. He let them play out until he had no more strength and tears. When he finally sat up, he felt empty. His tear-streaked cheeks felt limp, and his hazel eyes were red from crying. His brown, wavy hair was mussed, so he pulled his fingertips through the mess, trying to untangle the snarls. He pulled his pillow out from under the covers, punched it a few times, set it on top of his gray bedspread, and lay back on the pillow as his mind began to race. Billy thought of the time Grandpa Tom had taken him to the top of the gravel pit, sleigh in hand, and spent 2 hours repeatedly walking up the snow-covered gravel hills, then jumping in his sleigh and racing Billy to the bottom. He also remembered the winter day he and his friend Eddie had gone to Grandpa's to sleigh ride down the steep hill in back of Grandpa's house. Billy and Eddie made at least 30 runs down the hill that day. As they reached the bottom, each time there was Grandpa Tom waiting in his Jeep to load up the boys and their sleds, then drive them around the block and back to the top of the hill for another run. I hate him. Billy paused. I love him so much, he thought. The tears started again, and so did his memories.
It's Kathy Christiansen reading from her new book, The Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat, available on Amazon, I guess, and
yes.
Other places.
Amazon, uh-huh.
I guess.
Amazon Kindle.
Tell me about this incident where the soldier comes and attaches this pin to the casket.
So that was kind of interesting, and I did have to research this, but apparently that is the way that the Navy SEALs pay tribute to each other. When they die, that is the seal that they wear. And when they embed it in the coffin, it means that they want this person to be remembered for his valiant sacrifices and courage while serving in the SEALs.
Mm-hmm. So as the book moves along, Billy, along with the family, learns that Grandpa might not be dead, right?
Right.
And since this is directed to middle schoolers, the hero is the middle schooler. He sets off trying to solve this mystery with his friend. Tell me a little bit more about Billy. What stands out to you most from Billy? What did you want to create there?
Well, like I said, Billy does take after, to some degree, my brother Billy, and he is very courageous. Very kind-hearted, has a lot of family loyalty, is very persistent, does not want to give up. And once he gets the idea in his head that maybe his grandpa is not dead, but he is on a very important secret mission to try and do something valiant to help save some existing problems, he sets out to try and figure out if that's true or not. But he really believes in his heart that it is. And so he's willing to pursue it to no matter what ends he needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Doug.
Oh, Doug.
Doug's the bully slash rival, I guess. They have a feud going on, he and Billy.
They do. You know, it's really kind of interesting. As a school teacher, you do see bullying behavior. And you also do, as a mom, I did have a son who was bullied for a time, the last part of sixth grade and the early part of seventh grade. And it is really a tough and hard situation for the kids who are involved in it. And so I did want to make a character who was willing to stand up for himself in the situation. And Doug, who is the bully in the story, and whose two friends, Andy and Justin, kind of follow along, are just kind of a nightmare in Billy's life. But he is smart enough to try and stay out of their way. But when the situation becomes such that they are totally in his way, he figures out how to kind of get even with them.
Yeah. It's kind of a interesting subplot there. I love the relationship between grandpa and grandma.
Yes.
They would they'd go jogging, but not together.
Yes. And some of this is based on some personal experiences as well. Both Mike and I have always walked together. And then a few years ago, I decided I would start jogging. Mm-hmm. And I jogged too slow for him, and he jogged too fast for me. And so we just had to kind of do our own routes. But we'd always end up at one point kind of by each other. And so Mike would just cross the street and come over and kiss me on the cheek and then head on his way. And so I just thought that was such a sweet sentiment of his that I would put it in the book as something that Grandma and Grandpa did.
Yeah, that was sweet. It's even better now that I know that you and Mike. So so you had to do some research. So let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about this. I assume you don't ride BMX bikes, right?
Not at all.
assume you were not a Navy SEAL. Drones, Desert Storm, cybersecurity. So I want to talk a little bit about your research to put this book together. We're talking with Kathy Christiansen. Her new book is called Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat, and it's available on Amazon. More following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We have in studio today Kathy Christiansen, who was a middle school teacher for 25 years, won several awards for being Teacher of the Year. And now she's crossed an item on her bucket list off. She had an idea of writing a book. And so now she's done it. The result is a very fun read, Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat, targeted to, I guess, teenagers, right?
Yes.
Mostly, although, you know, I enjoyed it as an adult. So that's where I want to start. I want to get into the research a little bit later here. But middle school, did you select that as to be a teacher in middle school?
Well, I actually, I graduated in English education and wanted to teach high school. Mm-hmm. I had such a great experience in high school. Some kids don't, but I really did have a great experience in high school. Loved the connection between myself and teachers, and so really wanted to do that. I didn't start teaching until my youngest daughter was in first grade. And so there was a period of time where I was a stay-at-home mom and did a lot of volunteer work in PTA and community and things like that. But I did want to teach high school, but when it came time to teach to get a job and start to teach, I still had two young girls in elementary school. And there's a lot of extracurricular activities that high school teachers are involved in. And so I interviewed for both high school and for middle school and decided to take the middle school job because it just made it a better fit for my family. And I never really regretted that. I was able to teach sixth graders because they were in the middle school. Normally, that would be an elementary teacher who would take that position. But I thought, well, I'll teach here for a few years, and then I'll go on to the high school. And I ended up just loving middle school students. And I particularly liked the sixth grade boys, which is kind of interesting because they are a little slower to mature than the girls are. But you do see that maturity start to take place. But even as they make that change, there is such a bond between middle school sixth grade boys and their moms, which was so interesting to me. They would be these tough, rough, act cool kids in school, and then they'd come in with their mom hanging onto her arm with their head on her shoulder, and it was just really fun to see that bond. Girls were just starting to mature as well, and not quite into the I guess maybe the emotional girl stage. And so they were really sweet too. Very, very fun. I enjoyed teaching the sixth grade for those 25 years.
This is about 12 year olds approximately.
They start out, some of them at 11.
Yeah. So that, you know, it can be a fun time, but can be really stressful too. I tell people I never want to go back to middle school. I was a nervous kid and it just was. There's some hard things about it for me.
There are hard things. And I told all of my students every single year, if you can make it through middle school, you can do anything. And I really believe that. That is a hard stage of life. They're up, they're down. You never know from one day to the next where they're going to be on the emotional spectrum. And it was kind of fun to be able to try and smooth some of that out for the kids as well.
Yeah. I do have, I think this was middle school. I do have a, you know, I'd have some negative memories, but one positive one, I had a, the kind of stereotypical thing where I wrote a little note to the girl I liked and handed it to my best friend who handed it to her best friend who handed it to her. Do you like me? Yes, no, maybe. And I think she checked yes. That was, you know, that was a good day.
That was a good day.
But there's a lot of development that happens, right, during those years.
Yeah.
And it could be very confusing.
Yeah.
So as a teacher, what, I guess there's a lot of chaos there. Some sweetness, as you said, right? How do you navigate that as a teacher?
I think that middle school teachers kind of have to have the personality to deal with it, because I've had so many teachers in elementary school and high school who tell me, oh, I could never teach middle school. And when Mike and I were first married, I did a little bit, and we had our first child, I did a little bit of substitute teaching, and I was willing to do elementary, and I was willing to do high school, but I never would take middle school because I thought it was going to be too hard. So you're right. There is a lot of chaos there. But what I felt really strongly about was those years are so important. The education at that time is so important for kids to make the transition into high school. But if you don't go with the flow and make teaching fun, and get them very involved in enjoying what they're learning, it's going to be a tough class. But if you can do that, they are with you, and they love that activity. They love that fun. They loved that learning. And I've had several kids come back and say, you were my favorite teacher because you were fun. And I still remember learning. Whatever, you know, they said.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's kind of the reward of teaching for all teachers, I think, is the 20 years later.
Right, exactly. That's when the reward comes, right?
Yeah.
So you taught reading and writing.
Yes.
I just want to read this. It's on the book jacket here. You believe that reading good books provides a view of the world that helps children grow and understand their place in life. So obviously, reading and writing are bound up with each other, and that's what you were teaching. Do you recall any of the books that you assigned, or maybe that you would assign now?
Well, I can tell you the books that we read together. We did The Forgotten Door, which was a little bit of a science fiction story. We did The K by Theodore Taylor, which is kind of a equity type of story about a young boy who is shipwrecked, and he ends up on an island with a gentleman who is black and not educated and has been working on the docks. And this boy thinks he is so much better and smarter than this gentleman until it comes to surviving on the island. Hmm. And then he finds out that this man really is very smart and also very caring and loving and takes care of him until they can get help. So that was kind of a fun one. We had a lot of reading your own books and reading books in groups of four together where they discussed and talked about the different stories and the different issues and what they thought about different things. The Giver, as I recall, is one of those. Some of these are starting to escape me because it's been a while since I taught them. But I did try to use books where the students could kind of just see a different aspect of life, different than what they were used to, and kind of learn some character values.
And then writing, right?
Yes.
Have them give a go, I guess. Tell me what writing does for kids.
I really liked the writing part of my teaching. I was part of the Utah Writing Project, which Bill Strong was in charge of that for Utah. And he's been such a great mentor for me over the years in college. He was a teacher. He helped me when I got started back into teaching. And then he was in my writing group that helped me with this book. But he organized workshops once a month on Saturdays down in Salt Lake for all of the English teachers who wanted to come and be part of the Utah Writing Project. And it was other teachers and specialists from all over the United States who came in and gave us information on how to help kids become better writers. The thing about writing is it sounds really fun, but it actually is really hard. And a lot of students just never thought that they could do it. It's like they would say, oh, I don't know how to write. But we tried a lot of different genres, which I really liked that we did that as well. And so the students were able to have a lot of specific instructions and directions on what was necessary in order to create a certain genre of writing. And as we did it step by step, process by process, they became writers. And then they just had so much confidence in themselves that they were going to be able to do that. And one of the reasons why I think the students always said, oh, I'm not a writer, is they didn't know how to come up with an idea. Like I didn't know how to come up with my idea for this book. And so one of the big steps was, actually step one was pre-writing, coming up with ideas. And we tried a lot of different methods on how do you come up with an idea of what you would like to write about. And then once they had the idea, then you could start teaching the skills. Hmm.
Did you follow this? And did you do pre-writing and that sort of thing?
Yes, I did to some degree. Yeah. I kind of outlined the story after I got the idea. My book was going to have 12 chapters in it. I think I ended up with 28. So it changed a little bit along the way. But yeah, I did. And Mike was kind of my responding group. When I finished a chapter, I would read it to him and he would offer his comments and suggestions and help. And then I did have the writing group with Bill and Jerry Maloof and Patty Mortensen. And we got together once a month and we would share our writing and respond. And then I would go home and revise. And it was kind of interesting because I had a couple of my grandchildren reading these chapters as I wrote them too. And so they kind of gave me feedback along the way.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. They were enjoying them. I guess test audience, right?
They were the test to see if kids that age would enjoy reading it and tell me if they didn't.
So
that was good.
I imagine they would, right?
They were pretty good, but they didn't want to hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah. It's grandma, right?
So. Yes.
Well, we teased this, so let's talk about, so in the plot, I'll just read this again, Billy Barnes and the cyber threat, the two boys embark on a dangerous quest to find Billy's grandpa, and they confront obstacles and setbacks, including Doug, the school bully. The plot involves a threatening global financial meltdown. Billy deploys his dad's drone, takes risks, uses computer skills to locate his grandpa at the terrorist's hideout. Has little to rely on except his BMX bike tricks and courage. Let's start there. BMX bikes. Tell me about the I like the descriptions in the book, but Billy and Eddie are always on their BMX bikes.
They are, yeah. I'm not really sure why I put them on BMX bikes. I don't remember exactly how that idea came up, but I knew nothing about BMX bike riding at all. But what's interesting is you can learn just about anything on YouTube. And so that's what I did. I went to YouTube and I just watched lots of videos on the BMX bike riders. Did a little bit of Googling and got some written information on some of it. And the first time I read that chapter to my riding group, their comment was, oh, you've got to describe these tricks more, because I just kind of mentioned the names, and as I was writing it, I was thinking, yeah, this is an easy way to do it. I'll just mention the names of the different tricks. But after meeting with them, I realized, oh, I've got to do some research and find out, you know, how do these tricks work? And so that's really where I got my information for the BMX bike riding was the YouTubes and just Googling.
Yeah. I learned from the book the fire hydrant is the one you often see where you stand on the pegs on the front tire and then the rest of the bike rotates 360.
Yes, and you have to step over.
You have to step over, yeah.
You have to step over the bike so you don't fall off or crash.
A lot of practice, right? You describe how Billy practices a lot and often fall, gets scrapes as you practice, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's boys. So the Navy SEAL part of this.
I had to Google that to get the information. I really didn't know anybody who had been in the Navy SEALs. And so that's where I got my information was I just Googled it. I believe it came up as, what's the one that when you Google, it's kind of like an encyclopedia.
Oh, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia, yeah. That's where I got my information for a lot of that. And, you know, and once you Google one thing, it kind of leads to another that you can read. And that was really interesting learning about that.
Yeah. So drones.
Drones, I knew nothing about drones. But one day when Mike and I were just sitting out on our deck in the backyard, there was a drone that came over the top of us. And I'm not sure if that's where I got the idea to use it or if that's where I thought, oh, I know somebody who has a drone. And it was my neighbor. I found out who had the drone. And so he came over and explained everything to me about how the drones work. And then he took it up and flew it and let me watch. And I just took notes all the while he was doing it. After I got that chapter written, I took the chapter over to him and asked him if he would read it and make sure that it was accurate. And once he gave his stamp of approval on it, then I put that in the book.
Yeah. Cybersecurity, right? Computers, hacking, that whole world.
Oh, that is just such an interesting thing because I am of the age group that really didn't have a lot of training in computers. And probably the only training that I had was as a teacher. So I was really good at putting in grades. I was really good at taking attendance. I was really good at Googling some things that I needed. And I learned how to teach a PowerPoint to my students, but I didn't really know very much else about it. And so that was another thing that I had to go online and Google and learn some information about. And honestly, you can find anything you want about computers.
It's a very modern, you know, plot point, obviously. So Grandpa fought in Desert Storm, right? So
right.
You have to learn about Desert Storm.
Yes. I was teaching school at the time we had Desert Storm. And I had moved from North Cache to Cedar Ridge Middle School. And that school was so crowded at that time that they decided they would try year-round. And so our schedule was 6 weeks on, 3 weeks off. And during that time period was when Desert Storm happened. And so I always had 3 weeks after every 6 weeks that I was home, and Desert Storm was going on. And so I watched an awful lot of CNN on what was going on in Desert Storm, but it doesn't really give you the particulars. So once again, I had to Google to get all of the detailed information about that.
I remember that as well. It was, you know, these images on television for sure. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Kathy Christiansen. Her book is Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat. More following this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're spending the hour with Kathy Christiansen, a former middle school teacher, and has now written a book aimed at that age group. Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat is the name of the book. In brief, Billy Barnes has to go in search of his grandfather, who they went through his funeral, right? And then it comes clear that maybe he's not dead. Maybe he's undercover for the FBI and or whatever. And so Billy has to go through a lot of adventures to try to find his grandfather. Maybe you could read another passage from the book.
Yes. This one comes from chapter 3, and it's about Doug the Bully. A couple weeks later, school began, and quite frankly, Billy was glad to get back to a structured routine. He knew the daily classes, time with friends, and homework would take his mind off his grandpa's absence. He and Eddie were seventh graders now, the second oldest group in the school. They managed to get into two classes together, computer class and P.E. Both boys were good at computers, and P.E. wasn't hard, so they always had a little extra time in those two classes to mess around together. The only problem with going back to school was Doug Schwartz, Billy's nemesis. Doug was 1 year older than Billy and bigger and stronger than all the kids in the school. Billy and he had had problems since Billy was in the third grade. Back then, one day during lunch hour, Doug had been acting like a big shot on the playground and snatched a kickball from a small first-grade boy. The little boy started to cry, and Doug shouted, "Come and get it if you want it, first-grade baby!" That made the boy cry harder. Billy observed what was going on. He was mischievous, but he wasn't mean. When he saw Doug's bullying behavior, it irked him. He'd been taught to not pick on anyone smaller than himself. So he jogged over to Doug, swatted the ball out of his hands, and yelled, "Pick on someone your own size, you big bully." Doug ran after the ball as it bounced across the asphalt surface, grabbed it, and threw it right at Billy's head, hitting him in the face. "Don't tell me what to do, you little third grader." Both the comment and the ball stung, which made Billy mad. So he shouted right back, "Hey, Hulk, is your mama a green bodybuilder?" This made the kids on the playground laugh. The snide remark didn't sit well with Doug. He didn't like being teased or laughed at, so he ran over to Billy, wrapped his arms around him from behind, picked him up off his feet, shuffled to the open custodian's workshed next to the school, plopped Billy down, pushed him inside, knocking him over, slammed the door, and snapped shut the lock. Billy fell hard into a pile of boxes. Quickly, he rolled over and jumped to his feet, ready to get out and finish the fight with Doug. He moved to the door, but it wouldn't budge. He was locked inside. Surveying inside the shed, he noticed a metal ladder standing off balance against the wall. In one corner, a stack of empty buckets perched atop a small wooden table. Rakes, snow shovels, a hedge trimmer, a couple of dustpans, and several brooms of varying sizes rested in an equipment rack on the wall opposite the ladder. A riding lawnmower with clumps of grass stuck to the sides, sat undisturbed in the middle of the shed. Surrounding the mower were large, empty boxes in a haphazard pile. It looked as though Mr. Molesman, the custodian, had tossed them into the shed in a hurry. Spiderwebs dangled from the corners of the shed, and dead flies dotted the only windowsill in the structure. Several spiders scurried across the floor as he walked to the bolted window. Billy hated spiders. He also hated closed-in spaces. "Hey, let me out!" he screamed as he moved to the window and pounded on the glass. Yelling to the kids on the playground, he said, "Go get Mr. Molesman, quick!" The kids, seeing what happened and hearing him scream, ran to Mr. Ewing, the teacher on playground duty, for help. Mr. Ewing sent a fourth-grade boy to alert Mr. Mosman of the trouble. A couple minutes later, Mr. Mosman came sauntering outside, holding the key. By the time Billy was released from the shed, he was furious, and Doug had disappeared inside the building. Fuming as he walked into the school, he determined to somehow get even with Doug. And that is what started the feud.
And the feud continues, right?
And the feud continues.
Yeah. Even though the middle school principal gets wind of it and...
Oh, yes.
Threatens them. And that lasts for most of the next year, right? But
right.
Not all of the next year. Yeah. And then it goes on. And Doug gets involved in this the whole plot as we go along as well. I want to talk about, we were talking before we went on the air, interesting, you're on a school board.
I am.
And part of your job is reviewing books, I guess, to determine whether, because a parent can complain, want a book to be removed.
Correct.
Right? So tell me about that process.
Well, we have a pretty good process in the district for when a parent does... want to have a book removed from the media center. And it first has to have a subjective review where the district people determine whether, yes, there is a problem that we need to look at, or no, it doesn't need to be removed. And then it has an objective review where they bring in a committee who reads the book, and then they review it according to the state laws. Then if it is determined that it should be removed, then it's removed in all of the libraries in our district. If it is determined that it should stay, you can say, well, we won't have it in elementary libraries, or we won't have it in elementary and middle school, but we'll keep it in the high school libraries. Then the parents can make an appeal to the board for them to review it and see what they think about the book.
You were telling me there's a specific book. Was it kind of interesting case as I was trying to think through it, right? The Kite Runner, which I haven't read. I'll just put that disclaimer, but a lot of very important themes in that book. But apparently there's some passages that
there are some passages some that some parents are, a few parents have been concerned about. In it. And I really feel like I can't comment on that one right now.
Okay.
Because the meeting is tonight to determine what the board is going to do.
So we'll see.
Yeah. But we have had two other books. One was I Know Why the Songbird Sings, Maya Angelou.
Yeah, the Caged Bird Sings.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was the, another one. Anyway, the board decided to keep those two books because there were passages in there that some parents maybe would not want their child to hear. But the books have such great value in the material that they present as far as the importance of keeping a democracy and also surviving difficult situations in your life as you're growing up and coming out on the other side stronger and smarter, and also a lot of literary value as well.
So it's a balancing.
Yeah,
balancing
it
act,
really
right?
is. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that must be one of the more difficult things being on a school board.
It is because
to try to get that balance right.
Right. And you always have someone who's not happy about the end result. And I kind of am the person who likes to make everybody happy.
Right.
So that's a little bit tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. We just have about a minute left. Anything else you'd like to say about the book or anything else?
Well, I think it is a really fun read. I've had a 10-year-old read it who said she loved it. And I've had adults read it who have said that they have really enjoyed it as well, and all ages in between. I listed it as a book for 10-year-olds up to 16-year-olds. But the spectrum goes, I guess, from 10 to 74
right. Yeah.
on it. And it really is a very fun, implausible adventure. It's fiction based on some truth. And the three components that I used to write it were creativity and personal experience and research. And it has been a really fun learning experience for me. It can be purchased at Amazon.
All right. You get that on Amazon. Yeah, good read. It's called Billy Barnes and the Cyber Threat. And the author, Kathy Christiansen, has been with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah today.
Under the Milky Way tonight.
It's One Sky, Many Cultures. Skywatcher Leo T here. It's Pluto Day. On the 18th, the other day, when I penned this edition, thanks to a tip from Skywatcher Tina T., this is a well-written, researched article from the magazine online. It's Time Magazine. Pluto, the ninth planet discovered, Pluto remains one of the most fascinating and mysterious worlds of the solar system, far more dynamic than skeptics thought. And on February 18th, once again, it marks 95 years since the Lowell Observatory hit pay dirt, an achievement made not by one of the observatory's professional astronomers, but by amateur Clyde Tombaugh, a farm boy from Kansas, who at the time was just 24 years old. Not long before coming to work at the observatory, Tombaugh had built his own telescope, with which he had conducted observations of Mars and Jupiter. He made drawings of the two planets, and he sent those to the Lowell Observatory, hoping he would get a little bit of comment and critique. Well, the director of the observatory did Tombaugh one better, offering the eager stargazer a job. Well, Percival Lowell, who founded the observatory, had long worked on finding the ninth planet, theorizing that the wobbles of Neptune and Uranus were caused by gravitational pull from another body out here, and they narrowed down the region to search on. Based on this and some math, Tombaugh captured two images of each spot of sky on photographic plates. The second image of every pair was typically taken several days after the first. Over that relatively short period, background stars would not have moved at all, but a foreground object like a planet would have detectably shifted its position, and Clyde eventually saw something moving against the background. You can still see the equipment and plates at the Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona. Well worth a visit. And Pluto finally received a visit when the New Horizons spacecraft flew by it in 2015 after a nine-year journey. A true victory for space exploration, NASA, JPL, and funded by the American taxpayer. Something we all pitched in for as a people for scientific knowledge and expansion of our senses into the universe. That's what's out there. New Horizons and Jay Webb discovered that Pluto has five moons. Believe it. One is Charon, it's half the size of Pluto, and the two orbit a common point due to the gravitational balancing act going on here. New Horizons discovered that Pluto is home to the largest glacier in the solar system, one larger than Texas and Oklahoma combined. What's more, the glacier is pristine with no craters, meaning that it is regularly being resurfaced. It's the secret to all of that activity is that Pluto probably has an underground ocean. It also has mountains, craters, valleys, and plains, and might even have some plate tectonics. The tiny distant world is just about 1,500 miles in distance, or a little more than half the coast-to-coast distance of the continental U.S., lies up to 4.67 billion miles from Earth. Pluto takes about 248 Earth years to orbit the Sun. Happy birthday coming up here in a few years. If you're in Greenwich, England, Pluto can be seen in Capricornus, which rises way early in the pre-dawn if you're on the other side of the world, if you have a big enough telescope. Also in the sky, according to Sky and Telescope, this is a fine week to look for zodiacal light live in the mid-northern latitudes in the early evening sky. It is moonless and the ecliptic tilts high upward from the western horizon at nightfall. From a clear, dark sky with clean air, look west at the end of twilight for a dim but huge tall pyramid of pearly light. It's tilted to the left, aligned with the constellations of the zodiac. What you're seeing is sunlit interplanetary dust originating from old asteroid collisions and long evaporated comets orbiting the sun near the ecliptic plane. As it is One Sky, Many Cultures, let's check back in on what it's like to be on and in and spacewalking on the International Space Station. The following is an excerpt from the novel Orbital by Samantha Harvey. From the viewpoint of astronauts on board, I highly recommend this book for feeling emotions of those Earthlings aboard the ISS above Earth. Their view is surreal and surprising. Six of them in a great H of metal hanging above the Earth, two Americans, Japanese, British, Italian, and two Russians. Two women, four men, and space station make up 17 connecting modules, 17,500 miles an hour to stay in orbit. Flash ahead in the book to page 107, continuing a passage that you need to read all of, but we'll dive into here. The night's electric excess takes their breath. the spread of life, the way the planet proclaims to the abyss, there's something and someone here, and how for all that a sense of friendliness and peace prevails. After a week or so, things change. The senses begin to broaden and deepen, and it's the daytime Earth they come to love. It's the humanless simplicity of land and sea, the way the planet seems to breathe, an animal unto itself. It's the planet's indifferent turning in indifferent space and perfection of the sphere which transcends all language. We'll do more on this out of this wonderful novel again. So keep investigating your galaxy. Look up, look around, and get a little bit lost in space. Skywatcher Leo T.